According to our next guest, it doesn't seem to matter which political party wins the 2012 presidential candidacy. Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota, writes, "The welfare of the American people is the third priority to any president. First, there's the promises to the corporations, which paid millions of dollars to fund his campaign. Next, his allegiance to his political party. Third on the list is what would be best for the nation." He writes in his new book, Democrips and Rebloodlicans, No More Gangs in Government. It's a great pleasure to welcome Governor Jesse Ventura back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Nice to be here.
You know, you were with us when this book first came out, and since then a lot has happened in the sense of the race for president has firmed up. We have had the conventions, and now we're getting down to the wire. You're snickering. So so for you, has anything changed?
Not really. It's just amazing, though, to watch it, how it all transpires. I didn't watch 1 minute of either convention. I remember I was asked by Joy Behar's people, "Well, you watched the conventions, didn't you?" I said, "Absolutely not." I said, "It's nothing but political theater, and I don't need people lying to me for 3 hours on TV at night."
But you get a sense of the platform, you get a sense of the party, you get a sense of what's going to be said. And for you, it doesn't make any difference, because as you say, either way, they are, quote, thugs in Brooks Brothers suits.
Absolutely. You know, their allegiance, first and foremost, they're just like the street gangs. In fact, they've even stolen their color code. The Crip street gang's color is blue. Well, what's a blue state? That's a Democratic state. The Bloods, naturally, their color is red. Well, what's a red state? That's a Republican state. They're identically, the hierarchy are just like gangs. You have to have first loyalty to the gang. Then it's loyalty to how the gang makes its money, which in politics is the big corporate donors. And we, the people, might be third or fourth, maybe, if we're lucky.
Were we ever number one, and what happened?
Well, maybe we were years ago. I don't think so, because these two gangs have been in charge for 150 years now. They're fully responsible for the shape our country's in, yet they will try to blame us for it. It's not their responsibility. And I think what people in this country have failed to realize, and they've been made this way by both the media and the two political parties, is that we forgot they're supposed to work for us. We don't work for them. But it seems that's been swapped. They think we work for them now and that they're in charge. We're in charge, or we're supposed to be in charge.
The last time we talked a lot about the candidates and what went wrong there. I am interested in your thoughts on the media and how they are culpable in this.
Well, they're culpable because first thing they do, any third voice is always poo-pooed, or you're called a wing nut or this and that. And, you know, I find it interesting that in the private sector, competition is good. They tell you competition's what makes capitalism work. Yet in the public sector, obviously competition isn't good, because we haven't heard a third voice in a debate now for 20 years. 20 years it's been since Ross Perot in 92, since we've had a third entity in a debate. And remember this, you don't pick your president. The gangs do. The two gangs offer you one gang leader, and then you expect to pick from the two gangs. And always remember what the late, great Jerry Garcia said. If you're made to pick the lesser of two evils, it means you're still picking evil.
How hard is it for you, being a third voice, to get your message out? So you have a book. How hard is it for you to get on a show? How hard is it for you to get your message out?
Well, it's getting difficult because MSNBC has banned me, and so has Fox News. You know, I can't appear on any of their shows. I don't know why, but they won't have me, you know, probably because of the nature of what I do. You know, I question the media and I question the status quo in this country. And I believe that's what patriotism is. Patriotism is not go along to get along. Patriotism is not be a sheep and do whatever your government tells you. Patriotism, in my view, is question your government always. Hold their feet to the fire, because if you don't hold their feet to the fire, you'll get bad government.
When you say ban, Are your calls just not returned, or were you told specifically that you will never be on the network again?
No, I was never told. No, not at all. But I can't get on. They won't have me on. They haven't had me on now for years. When I write a new book, you know, CNN does, you know, and all that, and Howard Stern and people like that. I'm grateful to all them. But they just ignore me. They won't have me on. I've never been on O'Reilly. I haven't been on Hannity for 3 or 4 years. None of MSNBC won't have me because they hired me and paid me millions of dollars and then wouldn't put my show on TV because I opposed the Iraq War. And they also pulled Phil Donahue at the time, which was their highest rated show back in 03, because if you recall back to the build up to the Iraq War, there was no one in the media that even questioned the invasion of Iraq. And anybody that tried to got like I did. They literally bought my silence. I was on a 3-year contract. They wouldn't put my show on TV, and I just sat there and I couldn't talk to anyone because my contract said I couldn't do any news or cable shows.
It was a fascinating time because Phil Donahue was on the air. He was questioning these things, and then he lost his show. Now you look at the network that is based on Rachel Maddow and others that are bringing in ratings, but saying many of the same things that you are.
Well, not really. Rachel Maddow is a Democratic slug. You know, she's for the Democrats. And at the time I was at MSNBC, they were attempting to be Fox Lite. They were not liberal like they are now. They made a switch a couple years later to become liberal because they couldn't dethrone Fox on the conservative side. But when I was there, we used to laughingly call them Fox Lite.
And somebody like, because Phil Donahue would also be put into a Democratic category, but he was against the war.
Yep, so was I.
Yeah. When you look at the media environment now, is there a responsible, in your opinion, a responsible news source that will cover these issues in a way that gives the American people an idea of what's actually happening?
You know, you're going to be shocked, but I can't say domestically because I don't know if they cover domestic issues, but internationally, Al Jazeera is the best I've run into.
And what do they have that we don't?
Well, they allow me on. They allow you to talk. They don't seem to censor things. You know, when the wars are going on, they're out there in the field and they're telling you exactly what's happening. We're not allowed to know any of that anymore. All of our journalists are embedded with the troops. They learned that from Vietnam, that you can't have free journalism during a war, because if they write what's really going on in the war, public opinion could change on the war. And they don't want that to happen, so you don't get any of that. And it's amazing, and I hate to say it, but to me, the most balanced news internationally is Al Jazeera now.
Former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest. The name of the book, Democrips and Rebloodlicans, No More Gangs in Government. What do you make of the situation in Libya?
Well, you know, I view it like this. If they don't want us there, then let's leave. Let's close our embassy and get the hell out of there for all that. But it isn't going to happen, of course. But my view is, and let's stop all foreign aid. Why do we give aid to any other country on this planet when we're broke? We're so far in debt. Let me put that for your listeners in layman's terms. It would be like they're going to foreclose on your house and your 3 car payments behind, but your cousin Joe from Chicago wants to borrow $500 from you. Are you going to send it to him? Of course not. You can't afford it. We're so far in debt now. How the hell can we be? And all that is bribery. Ron Paul said it best, foreign aid, it's taking money from poor people in the United States and giving it to rich people in foreign countries. That's exactly what foreign aid is. It's buying influence in those countries. The same way as our election system is set up on bribery, they've now taken it to, that's what foreign aid is essentially, it's bribery.
When it comes to a calm and a peace in the world, does our presence help in any of that?
No, I think it hinders. I live outside the country now 5 months out of the year, and people should view the U.S. from the outside looking in, not the inside looking out. We're not who we used to be. It used to be other countries used to look up to us. Other countries wanted to emulate us. Not anymore. They're afraid of us. They're afraid if they cross the U.S. that they will get invaded, that they will be attacked by our military. I live in Mexico 4 to 5 months out of the year a couple years ago. You know what the most popular T-shirt down there was amongst the Mexican young people?
What's that?
It had a picture of George Bush and on the T-shirt, and it said, weapon of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we want to portray to the world? Is that the United States of today? I certainly hope not.
Has that changed over the past 4 years, do you believe?
Well, it's changed. Like I said, they now fear that we're going to invade them if they cross us. And let's go back a little. Let's go back to the 80s. You remember when the Marines in Lebanon were hit by that attack and over 200 of them were killed?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Ronald Reagan, the icon of the Republican Party, was the president then. Did Ronald Reagan go to war? No, he pulled us out. He said, let's get the hell out of here. And that's what we ought to do right now. We ought to get out of the Middle East, but we can't, because our military does not fight for the people of this country. Our military is the strong arm of the multinational corporations. That's who they fight for, and they've been doing it for well over 100 years. If you don't believe me, read the works of Major General Smedley Butler. He is the most decorated Marine in history. He won 2 Congressional Medals of Honor, and he wrote back in the early 1940s, he said, I didn't fight for the American people. I fought for the United Fruit Corporation. When they'd go into Central and South America, if they didn't get cooperation, they'd send in the U.S. Marines to get it. And for those that want to read what Smedley said, his book is called War is a Racket, by Major General Smedley Butler.
You fought for this nation? Did you?
What's that?
You fought for this country. Did you feel that way when you were in the service?
Absolutely not, because you're only 18 years old and you don't know no better. You only know what you've been taught in school. Today, I would tell you this, at age 60, born in 1951, there isn't one war in my lifetime that should have been fought. Not one of them. And I today would be a conscientious objector, even though I'm an atheist.
When you look at, and there's a lot of issues that you write about in the book, but I do want to get back to the election, because one of the things that you talk about in the book is that, yes, we're going to have an election, but you feel that with these electronic voting machines that came out as a result of the election of 2000, that we have only made the situation worse. The corporations that are inventing the machine are, in your opinion, legally allowed to commit voter fraud.
Absolutely. And this whole issue about IDs, picture IDs to vote, that's a big red herring. Voter fraud on the grassroots level is so minute that more people get hit by lightning than commit voter fraud. But voter fraud will happen with electronic voting machines, because like any other computer, they can be hacked into. Let me give it to you in this aspect, if I may, Joe. Would you go to an ATM machine that didn't offer you a receipt?
No.
All right. When you go to an electronic voting machine, you don't know if your candidate got your vote. That you could go there and say, like I will, Minnesota don't have them, so I won't. But if I went to electronic voting machine, I'm going to vote for Governor Gary Anderson, the Libertarian candidate for president. I could push his name on the electronic voting machine, but it could be hacked into and that vote could go to Mitt Romney. I would have no way of knowing. Plus, you can't do a recount with an electronic voting machine. All it does is give you numbers like an adding machine. You can't individually count every vote. I say we go back to the old method where you do it by hand, you take a pencil and you fill in the blank of who you vote for. If you're not capable of doing that, you've been taking tests since first grade that do that. If you're incapable of doing that, you shouldn't be voting anyway.
I'm 45 years old. Every time I have voted since I was 18, and it was always in a machine where you would go in and you would click the lever down and the little X would come up, and then you would pull the lever back and the curtain would open up, and you would assume that your vote was counted. But here again, you never got a receipt.
No, but if you fill in the blank on the thing, well, that's a paper ballot. There I know I filled it in, or I had the machine put the X next to the proper name. That's a receipt. Then you know, but on an electronic voting machine, you don't get that. You just hit the button and it tells you vote. That vote could be recorded for another candidate if the machine's hacked into.
And so what do we do to make the situation, and I don't just mean voting, I mean the fact that our votes count and that we are voting for people that we trust and that there is a fair election. And I ask you this question because you just mentioned that you'll be voting for the Libertarian candidate for governor. I assume you'll be voting
for president.
I'm sorry, the Libertarian candidate for president. You will be voting for the Libertarian candidate for president. So what does that say about our system and what we should be doing as a democratic society?
Well, again, vote for the candidate you most want to be your president. That's what your civic duty is to do. Remember, it's not a horse race. You're not there to pick a winner. And don't accept this garbage that if you vote for a third person, oh, like they said with Al Gore, it was all those Ralph Nader people that cost us the presidency. How arrogant. The people that voted for Ralph Nader wanted Ralph to be the president. That's why they voted for him. And to sit and say, we lost the election again, that's scapegoating. That's not even accepting responsibility for losing an election. It's blaming someone else for your loss. How low can you get? You know, again, I would tell people you can change this country, and the solution is as simple as the nose on your face, but it's going to be as difficult as climbing Mount Everest. And what that is simple. Stop voting for Democrats and Republicans and take our country back again from them.
Interestingly enough, though, you won as an independent. You were the governor of Minnesota, and in the book you say, I can't be an advocate for third-party politics anymore.
No, because any third party in which to compete, will have to corrupt themselves like the two we already have. Now, we've already got a two-headed monster. What good will a three-headed monster be? I say you abolish all the political parties, and a great way to start, a simple way to start, and it can be done locally. Why do we put party names and symbols on the ballot? Just put the candidate's name. It's done for the parties. You don't have to know the candidate. If you're a conservative today, you just walk in and look for the word Republican. If you're a liberal, you look for the word Democrat. You don't even have to know who the person is. Pull those names off the ballot. Then it's imperative for the voter to say, okay, I'm voting for John Smith. What does John Smith stand for? Now, the two parties could still endorse. He could have the Republican endorsement just as you get the endorsement from the teachers union or the fire union. But get those parties off the election ballot. Why are their names on the ballot? It's done for their reasoning and their good alone.
And also our...
Who was it said? William Buckley Jr., I think, said one time. He said, I'd rather vote for the first 356 names in the phone book than vote for these thieves in Washington.
But it's part of our culture in the sense that when we go into that voting booth, if we identify ourselves as Republicans, if we identify ourselves as members of the Green Party or the Democratic Party or the Working Families Party, and we see that those are the candidates that particular organization has endorsed, those are the candidates that we are interested in.
Well, so, you should do that yourself. If you're a member of that party, then you ought to know who your candidates are, shouldn't you?
Well, I agree. But,
you go. So you won't need their name on the ballot. You know that, I'm a Democrat. Oh, I know Joe Smith has the Democratic endorsement here. So when you walk in, you'll know you're going to vote for Joe Smith. But now you don't have to know nothing. You don't have to know the candidate. You don't even need to know his name. All you do is look for Republican or Democrat.
And if you take the names off, how do you think it would change? Because my guess would be that they would vote for the main candidates, the people that they know, the names they know, and the offices that they don't, the quote-unquote lesser offices would not have candidates chosen.
Well, you might get people that wouldn't know a thing and would just go in there and pick out the best name they like, too. I'd rather have that than what we currently have. You know, it would be more fair.
So, I always ask this question to you, and I always love your answer, but where does your optimism lie?
In the country? I'll tell you what, and I'm sad to say this, and the Democrats and Republicans are completely responsible for it. They've been in charge for 150 years now. I used to always say, well, in the United States of America, tomorrow will be a better day if today was bad. I can't say that anymore. I now have to look at the reality that tomorrow could be a worse day than today. And that pains me. It breaks my heart to say that about my country. But I believe that's where we've evolved to today. But there's still hope. There's still hope for us to take our country back. I just hope the lemmings of this country will wake up and realize that they still hold the power, and these people are supposed to work for us. We're not supposed to be working for them.
The name of the book is Democrips and Rebloodlicans, No More Gangs in Government. It's published by Skyhorse Publishing. Jesse Ventura, great pleasure to have you on the program as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe, and thanks for allowing me on the show. As I told you earlier, there are certain medias I'm not allowed on anymore, if you can imagine that. I guess they don't like ratings.
Well, it's a great pleasure, as always, to have you on the program.
Again, thanks, Joe, and we'll do it again sometime.
I look forward to it. Again, the name of the book, Democrips and Rebloodlicans, published by Skyhorse. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.